This podcast replay, it's brought to you by Edge Energy Drink. Go to myedgedrink.com and order the only energy drink I enjoy because it's delicious, smooth, and has zero aftertaste. That's my kind of energy drink. It's the Big O's choice. Make it yours. Get the Edge at myedgedrink.com.
Wow. David Shaw stepping down at Stanford, I see there. I did not know that. Wow.
That was the college story nobody was talking about. After yesterday, kind of happened overnight, though.
Good dude, bro. Good dude. All right. How you doing, first of all? You doing all right?
Yeah, man. That was, hard to pay attention to for a second there. But things got interesting late. Other than that, man, for at least two quarters, that looked like that's exactly what it's supposed to look like when you have 2 weeks to prepare for the worst team in the NFL.
Yeah, it's funny because human nature is you would let up in the bye week. Oh, we're playing a sorry-ass team. And actually, they came out sharp. And then after they abused them for a half, I think that there was kind of a little bit of a let-up in the second half because it's only human nature. And then the worst thing really that changed, I was just telling Joe this, really what changed everything was the injuries. Because, sure, thinking in the box, normally all of us thought, oh, they're going to run the hell out of the ball today because those people suck against the run. And Wilson's been hot. Why not unleash the Kraken? Go ahead, do it. No, that's not what the outside the box guy thinks outside the box. And he went and threw the ball all over the place. And it worked. It was fine. You were running him off the court or off the field. And unfortunately, the injuries just ended up like changing everything, dude. Brandon Schell wasn't playing left tackle. He's playing right tackle. Now he's got to change up his whole habits to left. And then all of a sudden, Jackson goes down, and now you thrust in a little who hasn't played in weeks, and he's not very good. I mean, it really changed the dynamics of that team, really.
It was tough. And McDaniel basically said that he will take responsibility for putting guys in tough position. Tua even took responsibility and said, the plays that I wanted run were not things that put guys in position to succeed. The facts are the facts. There, the line got a lot worse when Teron Armstead left the game.
Those are two leaders lying on the sword, bro. That's all. Yeah. That's all. Tua and McDaniel did. They were leaders lying on the sword, and that's what they're supposed to do. Even though we know it's really not their fault, but they have to take the heat for it. That's what those two leaders are there to do. They're supposed to do that.
That's it. Yeah, and even McDaniel even said, you know, that's one thing about these guys is I will sit up here and I will take responsibility for it, but they will take accountability among themselves to be better next week. You hope and pray, if you're a Dolphins fan, you hope and pray that Teron Armstead could play next week. Otherwise, it's Nick Bosa against who? It'll be
Greg Little for sure, and it'll be Brandon Schell at right tackle because that he excelled there. So leave him where he's comfortable, and whether he likes it or not, I think you've got to go max protect. And when you've got Greg Little at left tackle, then you're going to have either the tight end or Michael Dieter or something. You're going to have to do something, but I would think that I would use the tight end there and then get by with that at least. So that way Boza has to deal with the double team the entire time, and you have, unfortunately, less people running routes. But if you have Tua and Tyreek running routes, I like my chances on getting open.
Yeah, look, this is a good Niners defense on all three levels. They got a safety, yes, Tuifanga, who's playing at an all-pro level this year. I imagine that D'Amico Ryans is going to have him running all over the field. It's a guy you can't really play around with. So these play actions that are so impressive today, these play actions where you'd never see it. Tua is turning his back completely to the defense, whipping around and knowing exactly where his guys are going to be. I think people see it, and Tua makes it look easy, and people say that's easy to do. That is incredibly difficult and impressive to be able to do, and that speaks volumes to the timing of this offense and precision of this offense, that his back is to the defense. This is what remember when we sat in this parking lot 2 weeks ago, and I told you, Tua is not playing against defenses. Defenses are playing against him right now.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about. He doesn't need to see, okay, this is how they're lining up. This is where they're going post-snap. He read it pre-snap and said, this is where my guy's going to be. This is what they're doing. I know where I'm going with the ball. That really, you know, seeing him do that a couple of times today really, I thought impressed me, especially after a bye and then another break in action, you know, considering that they, you know, they were off for Thanksgiving, that, you know, that it had trap game written all over it, right? And I don't use that word lightly. Like, it had trap, it had lull, it had slow start written all over it, and they didn't. They didn't do it. This is a different Dolphins team than I think we're accustomed to seeing last year, maybe even the year or two prior. So, I thought it was an impressive first half. Predictably, they slowed down a little bit in the second half. They weren't going to foot to throat the entire time. That is something that, you know, I think we saw them do against Cleveland. So I'm not worried about their ability to do so, ability to finish an opponent off or put that proverbial foot to somebody's throat. In this case, I really don't think it would have taken an epic collapse. An epic might not even be a strong enough word for it, for this Houston team to come back, because that is one of the worst football teams I've ever seen with my own eyes. It's not close.
That was a really, really bad team that they played today. Do you know anything at all? I doubt you know anything about the Armstead situation, right? Do we even have a feeling if it's really? Because see, the thing I'm holding out hope is that they've been very precautionary this year with injuries. Like, they don't really put a lot of guys at risk normally. It's like, okay, let's hold you out. And since they had such a fat ass lead, maybe they want to hold them out. So I don't know, man. If it's a tear, they're screwed, obviously. But I'm hoping it's just some kind of strain or sprain, bro.
Yeah, I mean, McDaniel told us that it was something that he could not have come back from today. So, you know, I thought maybe, and I think a lot of people thought maybe, it's just not something you play around with. Look, if you're banged up, we're up by 30. Come on in. It'll be okay. Not the case. McDaniel said that there was no update after the game today. He didn't sound overly optimistic, but you take his words for it. There is no update. We'll have to wait until tomorrow afternoon. I think we'll know more, but it's concerning. It's a different offensive line without him. And, you know, we know that he's been banged up this year with that toe injury. And I think he popped up with an Achilles injury at some point, but the pec would be major. It's something he has missed time with previously in his career. It's something he's played through previously in his career. It's a matter of pain tolerance, but it does impact your effectiveness. Because, I mean, shoot, man, you think you use your toe on every play? You damn sure use your pectoral muscle as you're trying to force the best athletes on the field, or keep the best athletes on the field from touching your quarterback. So it is a concern, and we are kind of past the point. You remember when he left the game against the Jets, and you and I spoke, and I said, you know, if he's going to miss time at all this year, that was the time to do it, because you don't want to have to miss time late in the season when the games matter a lot more. This is you're running out of time to be missing games. You're tied with the Bills. You get the tiebreaker, but you are technically tied with the Bills right now atop the AFC East. You're a game above the Jets, who look like a football team again with the quarterback. They look like a football team again. They play the Bears.
They beat another team with a backup quarterback. They are the luckiest team in the NFL. I do like their defense. I don't fear Mike White. He had a terrific game, but all their wins have been against backup quarterbacks, dude. They are the luckiest team in the NFL, period.
It's lucky, it's this, it's that, the third, but they're 7-4 or whatever it is right now. So, like, they can luck their way into it, but the fact is that week 18 game might be for some. That it might be for a division title for Miami. It might be a playoff berth for New York. Regardless of how they got there, they're there. They're there, well, and that's what matters. They look better without Zach Wilson. They look better without Zach Wilson, and the defense is real. I'm not freaking out over what they did against who the hell did they play? Was it Simeon? Was it Peterman?
Yeah,
was it both? Simeon. I don't. Who cares? They're interchangeable.
Simeon got hurt in warmups. It was Peterman, and Peterman is, my God, I'd rather have you at quarterback.
And look, I'm not. You don't have an arm.
And I'm told you don't have much of an arm. And I'd rather have you at quarterback because I've heard you've also got a noodle arm too.
I promise you, I can throw that thing 50 yards. I promise you. I've done the research. I've done the tests. I've done the development. I got 50 yards in this ride on. But I'm not swooning over what that defense did against Nathan Peterman. I am swooning over what they have done.
It's a good defense.
Previously, you know, and when you look at the starting quarterback, they did beat Josh Allen. It's hard to do. So I think that it's a legitimate defense. It's a well-coached defense as well. These games matter is what I'm getting at. Like, you don't have over the next, we'll call it five or six, you got room to lose one because of, you know, the tiebreakers. You can still win against Buffalo and New York, but it's tight, man. It's really tight. So you would hope that if he is hurt, it's maybe a one game absence. At best, it's a one game absence, but you got pass rushers coming up, legit pass rushers on both of the next, each of the next two, each of your next two opponents with Nick Bosa and Khalil Mack. So you would love to be at full strength facing either of those teams.
Well, Jets are at Vikings next week. So we'll see now. Now they'll get a starter on the road. And that Vikings team will be a little fresher because they played on Thursday. So we'll see if they can actually survive that. Miami, obviously, next week is at the 49ers. The Bills, where are the Bills? On Thursday night at the Patriots. So short week for the Bills to go to New England and play. That's not going to be easy for them because that's going to be
They play this coming Thursday?
Yeah, they play Thursday.
No, it's a long week because they played on Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's right. That's right. They get a whole week.
So actually, they'll be kind of
They'll be rested.
They'll be pretty. Yeah, they'll be. Well, but they just lost Von Miller. Who knows for how long? That Detroit turf is trash. It's trash too. I remember talking to Raheem Mostert about that a couple of weeks ago, saying that was the field he hurt his knee on last year. It's one of those fields that when you see NFL players tweeting about going to grass, that is one of the fields that they have in mind. Trash, trash field.
Yeah.
But either way, you hate to see it happen to one of the great players in the game right now. So, you know, hopefully, you know, for his health standpoint, he'll be okay. If not, I mean, at worst, or at best, they're getting a banged up Von Miller. Miami's getting a banged up Von Miller in week 15. So, look, man, I think at full strength, I think Miami has what it takes to run the table here. They have what it takes to run the table here. That Niners game, if I have to pick anyone that they're going to lose, I would probably, you know,
well, they have what it takes. They have
the Niners game.
Armstead is healthy. If Armstead is playing,
that's what I said. At full health.
Yeah.
At full health. That's what I said. But like I said, gun to my head, if I had to choose a game that they might lose, that 49ers game, just because of what that team can do on either side of the ball, they're better than the Chargers. I think they're better than the Bills right now, to be quite honest, unless it's a blizzard out, which it could be. It's mid-December in Buffalo. But unless it's a blizzard and conditions are just out of whack and it evens the playing field like that, they've looked loads better, miles better than the Bills have over the past month of the season. Like, I think they go into that game, if the Bills are favored by three, that might be the case, which basically means it's a push, right? You know, teams get 3 points at home. I think that's about close. That's about close to a pick 'em, which if you're Buffalo, that's not ideal for you. If a South Florida team is coming into your home in December and you could basically call it a coin flip. But, you know, then those last games against New England and New York, it's going to decide. I think it's going to decide the division, man. Like, this thing's going to go down to week 17, week 18. We knew since May this was going to be that stretch that defines the Dolphins season, that this is that stretch that's really going to make the Dolphins and where we're really going to learn who they are. And I think we've learned a lot about them already. We've learned that they're a team that can handle adversity, that can win in the face of adversity, a team that a two-score deficit is not a death sentence anymore. It's not a death sentence anymore. It's a different team. It's a team that's making strides defensively. We're seeing that philosophical switch that we've been talking about here for a few weeks now. We're still seeing it round in the form. Bradley Chubb was a menace today. Everybody was a menace today. Houston's O-line sucks, but Chubb is still being the guy that you're paying $100-some-odd million to. Like, this is, he's showing you why he earns that money, why he's earning that money. You know, if that defense rounds into form and Armstead doesn't have to miss multiple weeks, it's a team that I don't think a lot of people are going to want to play come postseason.
Austin Jackson, what do you know?
Same deal as Teron Armstead. I saw him walking into the locker room. He was the last guy in the locker room today after the game. Definitely a limp there, but no, I didn't see him in a walking boot per se. I didn't catch him on his way out of the stadium though. But, you know, he looked like he was obviously nursing a little bit of pain there at the end of the game. We'll get a full update, or close to an update, from Mike McDaniel during tomorrow afternoon's media session, so sometime around 4 o'clock. But obviously you would prefer for Austin Jackson to be playing, especially if, or, you know, particularly if Teron Armstead is actually hurt.
Will Byron Jones play at all, or is he just going to stay doing Porsche videos?
Porsche videos. Hey, I said, like I've said this whole time.
Did you know about that?
I did not. I did not. Oh, but yeah, he's a car guy, right?
Go search Byron Jones Porsche, and it just came out last week, him and several other NFL players talking about their love for Porsches and driving them together and going out on the – it looks like they're on the West Coast and all that. So, you know, just, you know, he's a car enthusiast, and he loves his Porsches. I think Kendricks is another one of the players that has a Porsche that's in that thing. So yeah, it's, you want to check it out?
Yeah. I know he's a big car guy, but like I've been saying this whole time, if you haven't heard of his window being activated, add 3 weeks to his return. Take this week, so week 13, 14, 15, and then maybe he'll be back for week 16, 17, or 18. I think week 16 is the earliest that we'd see him, and, you know, don't run with that. This isn't an official report. I am saying that, you know, he's not going to play the week he's activated. He's probably not going to play the week after, and, you know, maybe the third week after that, but I would say, like I said, add 3 weeks to the current week. If he hasn't been activated yet,
well, he won't play. He won't play until he's right, until he's 100%.
Okay, and, I mean, at this point,
same.
He's 100%. You play him over Cater? I don't think I do.
Yeah. Well, no, I move Cater inside, and I keep him on the outside, and I make the team better in the secondary. Hell yeah, because you need three good corners, my man. And Cater has the hips to play. That's what I love about Cater. He can play outside and inside, and he has the athleticism also to play against tight ends and everything. I think Cater has all kinds of freaking abilities, dude. Yeah. Hell yeah.
My favorite thing about Cater.
When they drafted Pat Surtain, okay, and they had Madison, and they were young, but they also had Terrell Buckley. Right. And so Buckley had the experience. So what they did was, in his first year, they put Buckley on the outside with Madison on the outside, and they put Surtain in the slot. And why did they do that? Because Surtain had the hips to play the slot, where Madison did not. Madison was a outside corner. He was never an inside corner because that was not his thing. He liked to play aside. And so some corners are like that. And that's what I love about Darth Cater, is that Darth, you can play him on the outside. You can play him on inside. The kid's got a lot of ability, dude. And what he did with Mark Andrews in that Baltimore game, when he skied up there to make that play, that's some shit, dude. A Division II player to do that. I mean, I was just talking about him. You see him all the time. What I like about him also is he's had success. But he's not Zach Wilson. He's not letting any, even though that guy never had success, but he had, his head just grew and grew and grew because he kept banging.
No, Big O, he's 5-1 as a starter, Big O.
Yeah, he's 5-1.
He won five games this year.
barely doing anything in those wins. But anyway, my point
is, if there were ever proof, an embodiment, living embodiment, that wins are not a quarterback stat, it's Zach Wilson from this year.
Yeah.
Wait
a minute. They are a stat if you're the man that stirs the drink. Okay, so when you're Aaron Rodgers and when you're Tom Brady and when you're Pat Mahomes and when you're Tua Tagovailoa, yeah, dude. Because when you're running the offense, boy, it's a completely different offense than when anybody else is running the offense. So that's where I give wins a value to a quarterback. You know, dude, I've been here for 50 years and watching a really bad Dolphins team for 20 not have the guy that can make a difference in games. And, you know, now we have the guy that can make a difference in the games, you know. So to me, that's why I think winning is a stat depending on the guy, you know. That's all. So
I think it's worth mentioning depending on the guy, but it's not a quarterback stat. Because if it's a QB stat, like, there's too many stipulations. There's no way to uniformly say, okay, like, quantifiably say this guy is the reason why they won. If you count quarterback wins for one guy, you got to count them for them all. So, like, I'm not using wins as a QB stat, but it's worth mentioning for some guys when it is not worth mentioning for others.
You know, right. Like, I kind of look at it that way.
This team keeps winning.
Like Peyton Manning, did he really carry the Broncos to a title? No.
No, he did not at all. Very much didn't. That was that defense.
That was his worst season ever. He's the worst quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl. Okay.
Statistically, individual season. Yeah, 100%. That was one of the worst statistical quarterback seasons that ended in a Super Bowl win. Yeah. But you can say, I mean, this year, like, you could say the Jets won 5 games in spite of Zach Wilson.
Yes.
And the Dolphins have won 8 games because of Tua, largely because of Tua.
Wins are
not that, like, when we talk about Tua's, or Tua stats, I can't in good fairness say the Dolphins are, he's 8-0 or he's whatever the as a starter, because then you got to say it for Zach Wilson too, and that's misleading. So I think it's part of the conversation, but it's not a stat itself.
You fear Brady with the Patriots. You no longer fear the Patriots anymore. Because Brady's not there anymore. You know what I mean? It's just a whole different ballgame. And sure, they won enough to even get in the playoffs last year. They won enough with Matt Cassel almost to get in the playoffs one year. Miami ended up being the team that year. But again, it's a different thing when it's the guy that is the main reason why you are what you are. You know what I mean? And to me, that's where I decipher it, in other words. You know, I have to separate church and state here. Okay, who are you? You're Ryan Tannehill. Yeah, no. It's Derrick Henry that does it. You are there to facilitate, and at times you can be a good facilitator. But are you going to be the difference maker? No. And that's the guy that gets the stat for me, the difference maker at that position.
You want to talk about actually something interesting from something really interesting. I thought from today, first of all, why are there 4 games on in the 4 p.m. hour? That's weird. It's really weird.
You're saying that's a lot, right? Is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, it's usually 3. I was like, I was just checking the scoreboard real quick. I was like, why are 4 games happening? No, what I thought was really noteworthy from this post-game press conference. So everybody who watched the CBS broadcast probably heard. They told the story about how Tua looked himself in the mirror several times last year asking, do I suck? And McDaniel played a 700-play clip for him, highlighting his strengths to remind him, no, you're good at this game. And I asked McDaniel about that, gave a good answer, and I followed up asking, like, were you aware that his confidence was even that low? Like, was there a point that you could tell? And he said it was more rooted in intuition, not fact. And then goes on to say, you know, from my perspective, I felt like the guy was put behind the eight ball and then stopped himself. Because it was that close. He said what he meant to say, but it was that close to saying this last coaching staff didn't know how to use him.
Right.
Which basically, like, that's let's, I don't like putting words in people's mouth, but like, let's read between the lines here a little bit. That is kind of what he's saying. He's like that when you're not allowed to play to your strengths. Yeah. How could you be confident? What else could that possibly mean other than he wasn't put in position to succeed last year? That was, we were talking, you know, I got a few friends on this Houston beat and they're talking about, you know, Brian Flores came up and someone asked, you know, does he get another head coaching job? And I said, it gets a little less likely, or if it's happening, it gets a little farther away with every damn week that Tua looks like this.
Right, exactly. And that story comes out, you're the one that created that narrative. You're the one that fed all that bullshit, and then you convince other people that he's not that good. And so then the media and the fans are riding on Tua, thinking that everything else is bad when he's the bad guy. And by the way, I kept telling all of you guys that you would come on the show, I would tell you he's raising hell inside that building, and he was raising hell on a consistent basis. That's not a good dude, bro. That dude, he has ability to coach football and defense,
yes,
but his people skills, he can never be a head coach again.
There,
and that story gets out, and then the success of this offense now and that quarterback, it should convince everybody that Brian Flores is not fit to be a head coach. You want to hire him to be some kind of a position or defensive coordinator, fine, but don't put him in a position of authority where he is representing your franchise, because his self-interest. See, the beauty of Mike McDaniel is that he understands that he has to include everybody. He has to be inclusive.
He gets the entirety of it. It's more than just X's and O's. And it makes me think, because my first thought just then, and I had not thought about this until just now, so you guys can let me know what you think. My first thought, when you say, like, when you look at this offense, you wonder at what was wrong with Flo. Flo did not have – he didn't have this offense. And hear me out here. Hear me out. He didn't have Tyreek Hill. He didn't have Teron Armstead. He didn't have this, that, and the third. But it makes me wonder, would this have even been possible to compile if Flo was here? The reason why, when he was fired, I was surprised but not shocked. Surprised but not shocked, is I could believe he would be let go, because what offensive staff are you going to put together there in year four when it's been a new staff every single time? You're seen as a revolving door. What legitimate offensive staff can you put together? What faith do we have at this point that you can put together a good offensive staff? We don't.
But he's already cock-blocking all kinds of moves.
So you're gonna scrape the barrel. In theory, you're gonna scrape the barrel for an OC, because Studsville and Gotze, whatever that combination was, one or both had to go. Clearly, they chose Studsville over Gotze, so that would be out. You'd probably need another quarterback coach. You maybe need another wide receiver coach. So like you definitely needed a new O-line coach. So you see all this change. I said that. You said all this, you see all this change. Does Tyreek Hill get on the phone and say, this is the team I want to go to? Does Teron Armstead say, this is something I want to be a part of? Does Raheem Mostert?
He wouldn't have allowed it.
So it's easy to say, my first thought was, well, like, Flores didn't have all this. But I don't think all this happens without the excitement of the new staff, without the knowledge of this new staff and the way that McDaniel can sell the vision. I don't think all of this happens without that in place. So, yeah, like, yeah, I think we can credit McDaniel for – I think we can credit McDaniel for bringing kind of players.
It's Greer that made the Tyreek move. He's the one that goes to McDaniel, hey, Tyreek's available. What? So, I mean, they've told the story many times. So
yeah, but Mike talked to Mike, but Mike pitches him. Like, Mike pitches Tyreek. Like, you even saw, like, they got on the phone. I think he got on the phone with Drew or Tyreek or whatever, saying, like, oh, when you get here, we're going to do this, and I have this video to show you about how we're going to use you. And he's like, hey, wait, coach, I'm already
coming. My brother, it's the GM with the foresight that says, Tyreek is available. My coach should want him. Let me go talk to him. So he tells him, and then obviously the coach wants him, so you're all on the same page. That happened before. Yes. Only problem is every time the GM would go over to the coach, the guy always had some smart-ass remark and wanted something else instead done because he always wanted shit his way, not their way. And it's like, yo, dude, we're the personnel people. And so that's the one thing that I give also. We can give Greer a shit ton of credit for all kinds of things. But what the thing I give him credit for most is that he learned his lesson with Tannenbaum and those guys when they screwed up and gave Gase too much power personnel. They did the same stupid shit with Flores. This time around, that wasn't going to happen. This time, it's going to be a collective where you can make suggestions, but the personnel decisions are going to be made by Chris Greer, Marvin Allen, and Reggie McKenzie. And that's how it's going to happen.
And, you know, but what I'm,
that's why this team is where it's at now, because the personnel department is allowed to do what they do best.
And, but what I'm saying there though is that the Chiefs accepted two trades. They accepted the Jets trade, they accepted the Dolphins trade.
Right.
It was up to Tyreek where he wanted to go.
Of course.
So if it was Flo, I'm saying part of the reason, like, they get equal credit, but part of the reason why he's here is because of what McDaniel's system was going to do for him.
Oh, and he like also being he sold also on said, the system.
Wait a minute.
I had to make that, a mature. But he also said I had to make a mature business decision. Okay, he was very open about the taxes. That's also what made the difference in the deal. Yeah, very I'm open.
Sure.
About
I'm sure, but like and, I don't and, think we can definitively count that out. And the quarterback, but you got to understand too. Again, with all that turmoil, do you really want to do that? He has an easy life in Miami. You have a good quarterback. You have a good coach, a strong locker room. I don't know if one of the three does that for you. Nick Saleh is a good coach too. Saleh's a good coach too. Zach Wilson is not a good quarterback, but it would basically be like, I think the decision at the very least would be a little harder. Like, I can't definitively say that with Flores and whatever staff he would be able to put together, that Tyreek would be,
he wouldn't be here. So he wouldn't want to play for Flores. There's no way. There's a lot of
Flores
guys
would even want. I don't think Flores would even want Tyreek. Like, what star players were brought in under Brian Flores? That's not the Patriot way, right?
Amen.
So
amen.
Like, yeah, we can say we can say, oh, like Flo didn't have that. Flo didn't want that. I don't think Flo wanted that. As weird best as that sounds, that somebody doesn't want a Tyreek Hill.
Best move was not to bring that guy back. That was the greatest move that they made this entire offseason. And they made a lot of really good moves. But that one was the ultimate one that really opened the door for them to go out and do what they're going to do. All right, so we don't know anything about Armstead and Jackson. Anything else closing here from McDaniel that caught your eye? Any other important comments?
From McDaniel, no, not off the top of my head there. I did say, because I told him I would shout him out here. Shout out to my man Chris, who's on the field during game days. And he said, you know, with the camera, he said basically what I've been saying about Tua, like, you can see it in his eyes. You can see the control in his eyes that he has this year. You can see the way he is scanning the field, the way that, you know, he's dictating the flow, that he's dictating the aggression. It's simply a different and confident quarterback here, to the point where, like, I don't even recognize the guy that was playing the previous 2 years here. I think, you know, closing arguments here, looking forward to the next month or so. Going to be a long few weeks. We'll be out of town from, I mean, shit, the 2nd to the 12th. Then again, whenever they announce when the Buffalo game dates, then again on New Year's, like, it's, they're going to earn it, man. If they win their first division title since 08, they're going to earn that shit, because this is not a cakewalk to end the season.
Oh, no, there's no doubt, dude. Trust me, I've watched a lot of mediocre football for 20 years. This is not mediocre football. This is actually, you know, pretty special. The worst part about this season has been that they have had no luck whatsoever, none whatsoever, and they keep getting hit by injury after injury after injury, and somehow or another they have to overcome it, which is just, you know, a crazy thought. And it's pretty amazing that they're 8-3 with all the injuries that they've had on this team. And a first-year coach. My God. If you want to see a first-year coach go through hell in his first year, that's Mike McDaniel has faced all kinds of adversity. And kudos to him that in his rookie year as a coach, my Lord, he's been tested in every way possible. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to look at the other end of the spectrum, go look at Denver. That's a first-year coach situation that's not working out. But I'm not that surprised that they're 8-3. My bold prediction is that they would start the season 8-2. I said if this clicks early, then the sky is the limit, and it clicked early. So shout out to Mike for his ability to command a locker room and foster a culture. Yeah, man, it's been a fun season to cover. Looking forward to this last, like I said, this final stretch.
It's a beautiful thing. Follow him on Twitter at Marcel_LJ, and you can catch him on planes with Odell Beckham all the time.
I always miss drama at Miami Airport, man. Like, I just flew in yesterday. If I had flown in this morning instead, I might have been able to see all that.
No, I missed, it was in LA.
No, it was here.
Well, they were going to LA. The flight was heading for LA. That's what it was. Okay.
Yeah, I swear, like, if you want drama at MIA, if you want to catch drama at MIA, find out when I land or take off and then go hang out the day after. Like, I think Black China was caught yelling and screaming at somebody. And a day later, like the day after I took off for somewhere, I don't know, I got to look up the actual specifics, but it's pattern behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. But hey, your Bills are going to sign him soon. So, you know, what are you going
to
do?
He's going to the Cowboys. I'm happy for my girl.
You think so? You think he's going to end up in the Cowboys? Yeah. You know what? They're a mess.
The Bills just signed, John Brown to their practice squad.
God, that young man has fought so much. People don't realize he's had that illness too. And just to keep his career alive, I have a lot of admiration for John Brown, man. That young man has fought a lot just to be a football player, man. And it's a blessing every day for a lot of guys. And for John Brown, it's one hell of a hill he has to climb just to be a football player, dude. It's crazy.
He was legit back in 2019. I think I wrote all about it, that he was miscast as a deep threat, and he was a guy who can run the full – he can run the full route tree. Yeah. He can do whatever he's needed to do. He might not be a number one, but, right. I mean, shoot, he the Bills made the playoffs with him as their number one.
I wish he had a healthy career, and I think you would have seen a different John Brown. I really do. It's a shame, man. And he's had some injuries, too, I think, early in his career also that kind of set him back a little bit, too. So it's tough stuff. Marcel, as always, we'll catch up during the week, my friend. I appreciate you immensely.
Yes, sir.
Got it. There you go. You now have the edge, baby, with Marcel Louis-Jacques.